you in the 06010.
Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Go to geico.com today. And welcome into another off-season edition of the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. You know the crew, Field Yates, Stefania Bell, Matthew Berry. Taping this on Tuesday, February 23rd. I'll start with you, Stefania. How is the off-season treating you?
What off-season, Field?
I don't know. I guess that was a bit of a misnomer by me.
Yeah, no, it's good. I miss you guys.
You don't mean that. Do you mean that?
Well, you know, I mean it most of the time.
Okay, that's fair enough. When you mean it, do you mean like you miss one of us more than the other? You can be honest about that.
Yeah, see, I'm not, I don't want to share too much right now, okay. Phil, but I'll call you later.
Sometimes it's the things that you don't say that matter most. Matthew, how are you doing?
I'm good. You know why? Because I can see you guys. So we're, even though you're only hearing the audio portion of this podcast, we actually are doing it over Zoom where we can all see each other, except for Stefania, who, despite having 8 billion degrees, literally couldn't figure out how to turn on her camera last time we did a podcast. I've been able to do it my entire life. I saw you guys fine last show. I see you guys fine this show. And I just have merely a Syracuse University education, just a bachelor's degree. So, so there you go.
It's, I got a new computer and I did not know that it had a lens cover within the laptop. How many people have had a lens cover within the laptop cover of their computer? This is new technology.
It certainly is new technology to all of us. And speaking of new, the Colts have a new quarterback. So what I did there is we get into the news of the day. We're going to follow up later with some players and discussing whether they can repeat their success from last year in fantasy. So let's get to that news. A blockbuster, the second one of the quarterback variety so far this offseason. And again, the league year hasn't even begun. Carson Wentz, the Eagles quarterback, was traded to Indianapolis. Indy sent a third-round pick in 2021 and a conditional second-round pick in 2022 that can escalate to a first-round pick in two ways. If Wentz plays at least 75% of the snaps this upcoming season, Philadelphia gets a first-round pick in 2022. If Wentz plays at least 70% of the snaps and the Colts make the playoffs, Philly also gets that first-round pick in 2022. So it seems likely Philly will fetch that additional first-round pick. Matthew, let's get right to it. And I think we'll start with Indy because Wentz was the primary name involved in this move. He might have been, or maybe he was, the worst starting quarterback in football last year. But sometimes in fantasy, there is a gap between your real value and your value in fantasy. Can Carson Wentz get back on track and be a fantasy starter in this Indy offense?
So I think those are actually two questions. And I think the answers are yes and maybe. Okay. So the first question is, can Carson Wentz get back on track? And I think the answer is yes. I think he will play better in Indianapolis than he has in Philadelphia, just to the eye test, the NFL. Like he'll, you know, he's going to have a good line. He's going to be reunited with Frank Reich. And, you know, much has been made and rightfully so of the close connection that the two players, that both Frank Reich and Carson Wentz had just as people. You know, they're very close personally. They're both men of faith. And, you know, I think that connection obviously translated into the best season Carson Wentz has had when Reich was the offense coordinator of the Eagles 2016, 2017, Wentz's first 2 years in the league. You think about 2017, third best quarterback in fantasy, right? He was second in all quarterbacks among air yards per target. Like he was throwing downfield a lot, scoring fantasy points, and the Philly offense was pretty good. Third in offensive points per game, seventh in yards per game, right? So they're rolling. They go to the Super Bowl, whole deal, okay? So so do I think he can resurrect his career in Indianapolis? I do. I think it just being out of Philadelphia, being in an environment where he's wanted and surrounded by a good organization. This isn't to say Philadelphia isn't, but the Colts are a great organization from Chris Ballard on down. They've built it the right way and they have talent on both sides of the ball, and Carson Wentz will not have to carry the load by himself, which I think was some of the issue that he had in the post Frank Reich era, where there was just a lot of injuries to players on Philadelphia in terms of the offensive line, in terms of the other skill positions he's playing to. So to answer the first question, I do think he resurrects his career. I do think he can be a success and turn things around in Indy. Do I think he can be a fantasy superstar? No, I wouldn't say superstar. I don't think he gets back to being the third best quarterback in fantasy, right? Because you think about the Colts offensively field, and what do? I mean, they run the ball and they play good defense, and they'll open it up more under Carson Wentz, but is he going to run? Is he going to run a ton, right? Since 2017, the NFL has changed so much in terms of fantasy that rare is the quarterback who doesn't run that makes the top 10, right? When you sit here and you think about Josh Allen and Sean Watson and Kyler Murray and even Patrick Mahomes, will get you 300 yards in a year, right? I mean, when you think about sort of those kind of guys, right? I mean, I would prefer to have Jalen Hurts to Carson Wentz in fantasy this year. We'll talk about Hurts in a second, but I mean, you tell me, but he still has to stay healthy, which is a concern. He's not going to get into a lot of shootouts. Remember, since Frank Reich took over, the Colts are bottom 10 in the NFL in pass percentage. Now, some of that's because, you know, he's got Jacoby Brissett and Phillip Rivers. So some of that is personnel driven. But I still think, like, when you have that offensive line, you have Jonathan Taylor, and you have a really good defense, you don't need to be slinging it all over the field the way that maybe he was doing in 2017.
I largely agree with everything you said. So just remove Carson Wentz, the name, for a second, and just go through the checklist of things that typically make a fantasy quarterback a lock to be a starter every single week. Good receivers? Yeah, pretty good. Not otherworldly, but this is not a totally barren cabin he's going there to work with, especially if T.Y. Hilton is signed.
And if Paris Campbell comes back, we like Paris Campbell. You know, health has been an issue there, but we like Paris Campbell.
Yeah, but there's no health back. Signs. Yeah, he's under contract. There's no there's no doubt that Paris Campbell will be back next year. It's a matter of how healthy he'll be when he does.
That's what I mean. But he'll be back healthy. That's what I mean, obviously.
But just working through. So decent wide receiver / pass catcher group. Capable runner, but not a high volume runner. A good enough defense that shootouts aren't going to be his friend frequently. And then just like ability, right? And that's the part that you have to refactor in for Carson Wentz, because the ability last year was, as I mentioned earlier, just bottom tier. So I think there's a chance that Carson Wentz ends up in that tier of quarterbacks. Let's call it somewhere between like the 12th and 22nd best quarterback in a week, where he might be started in someone's lineup any given week. But I don't think anybody's going to be moving mountains to acquire Carson Wentz early. And I don't know that he's a guarantee to be a weekly starter. I feel like we use this analysis a lot in quarterbacks, but that's the tier that I think you can reach in this offensive system. Stefania, Matthew mentioned the
idea. I did a real quickly field before you move on. I just want to say just to that point specifically. Yeah, I was surprised at, and I think you and I are going to be on the low end, because I saw a lot of people really bullish on this move for Wentz fantasy wise. And like, I did a quick video reaction for ESPN and my social channels after the trade was announced. And I said, QB 15-ish, like somewhere in that 12 to 17 range, like a mid-tier QB2. I haven't done my off-season ranks just yet. I'm working on those. But my guess is he's going to slot in somewhere in that QB 15 range. And I think that's right. I think he's a deeper league play, a bye week fill-in. You know, we've certainly seen success, but I can't imagine anyone going into their drafts trying to target Carson Wentz.
Yeah, and I hate that we use that sort of analysis so frequently, but it's hard for me to thrust much more confidence behind Carson Wentz than what I just mentioned right there. And the big question, Stefania, with Carson Wentz is not just whether he can get right in terms of his accuracy, his decision-making, protecting the football, all the things that he basically failed last year, but whether he can stay on the field. I mentioned earlier about how there is a condition in the trade to make it a first-round pick. He's got to play at least 75% of the snaps. So whether the Colts are concerned about him staying as a performer on the field like he was last year or just being available, that's part of the narrative with Carson Wentz. Has he been a player that, if you evaluate the first 6 years of his career, you look at it and say 5 years, more unlucky, or is this player who has been injury-prone?
Yeah, I think it's a mixed bag. Let's go back to the major knee injury that he had, the multi-ligament knee injury. That was a result of contact when he was a runner. And thus came the narrative of, boy, running quarterbacks make you nervous because they're more likely to get hurt, which is interesting because the more we've seen, the more we have the running quarterback. And so I don't think that narrative applies across the board anymore. But I do think what it translated to the following year, and part of that might have been confidence on Carson Wentz's part. Part of it might have been something that he was trying to do because he had been coached or warned just not to be as much of a runner, but he was reluctant to run. That happens after those type of injuries anyway, due to anxiety or nervousness about re-injuring the knee. But the rest of that season, he ended up with a bunch of other injuries as well, including a back fracture that caused him problems late in the year. And I think that's really where this all came from. Like, wow, he has this blowout knee injury, and then he has a series of injuries the following season. But if you look at 2019, the last, you know, before the crisis season of last year, he played all 16 games in a season where he didn't have people to catch the ball consistently all 16 games. And so I think it's hard to separate out the injuries that Carson Wentz had and the problems that he had in terms of his identity related to the injury series over 2 years and the problems that he had related to what he had to work with. So I feel very uneasy about Indy because I don't really know what we're getting. I don't know if we get a new and revamped and more confident Carson Wentz, who's a couple years removed from all those major injuries and has a great go of it, or if this is something that's not as easily fixed by a change in location.
I'll sum it up like this before we move to Jalen Hurts, which is that I've been saying, if there's anywhere where I think that Carson Wentz has the best chance to resuscitate his career, I truly believe it's Indianapolis. That being said, what I'm not expecting is for him to go from the worst quarterback in the NFL to like a top five player at the position next year, fantasy or real football. And I think settling into somewhere between that 12 to 22 range in fantasy and also in real life in a lot of weeks is going to be good enough for Indy because they have a good roster. Let's go to Philly, Matthew. And
Field, one last thing I just want to mention on this is real interesting. Just a name to file away is Trey Burton. Again, we know that Frank Reich and Carson Wentz both like to feature the tight end. They obviously all played together in Philadelphia in 2017. Look, I'm obsessed with Mo Alie-Cox. You guys know that. But I do think, like, when we start.
He's a free agent, just for the record. So he may not be back. And there's some signs he will be.
You're saying Trey Burton is a free agent, may not be back, right?
Right.
Yeah, he was on a one-year deal. I think Mo Alie-Cox actually is a free agent too. I could be wrong on that. That's your area. So we'll see if Trey Burton is back, but certainly, you know, they seem to like him. He proved he was healthy this year. I don't know. Just that's an interesting name to file away, given Carson Wentz and Frank Reich together in Philly, knowing those two guys and their history together in 2017.
So we're going to dive deeper into some of the other players impacted by this trade, probably throughout the offseason as we get a better, clearer view of what the pass catchers in Indy look like and the pass catchers in Philadelphia look like. Let's talk about the quarterback. It's February 23rd. If I had to assign a percentage of likelihood that Jalen Hurts is the Eagles' week one starting quarterback, it's not 100% for me. I think it might be like 85% likely he is their week one starter. But let's have this conversation with the idea that Jalen Hurts is going to be the guy in week one, Matthew. And I know that we haven't had a ton of movement this offseason, but there hasn't been a player who I've seen the fantasy value excite you as much as Jalen Hurts now that he's stepping into a presumptive full-time starting role.
Yeah, I'm all in on Jalen Hurts. And right, if the Eagles draft somebody or do something in free agency, obviously that'll change. But as we sit here today with the idea that Hurts is going to be the starter, give me Jalen Hurts. Like, again, so this is a guy who was, over the final four games, you know, where he started, this was a guy who was a top 10 fantasy quarterback. He was ninth in total points. He was ninth in points per game. He averaged over 11 rushes per game. Just to give you guys a comparison of what that means, Lamar Jackson, among qualified quarterbacks, led the NFL in 10 rushes per game. Let's see. I think Cam Newton was at 9 per game. Kyler Murray was like an 8 per game. I mean, like the amount of rushing that Jalen Hurts was doing is massive. And I heard a lot of people, I put this out there and I said, like, look at his final four numbers. We did a little graphic and I put it out there. And look at the last four games of Lamar Jackson's rookie year and compare those numbers to the four games that Jalen Hurts started. And Jalen Hurts is better in every category. And of course, obviously, after Lamar Jackson's rookie year, he ended up leading the NFL in touchdown passes, and set a record for fantasy points by a quarterback and was the league MVP in 2019. I'm not saying that's the outcome for Jalen Hurts, but the people that are saying he's an inaccurate quarterback, he's an inaccurate thrower, he's only a running back, like, how many times do we have to hear this? Like, that's what we heard about Josh Allen. That's what we heard about Lamar Jackson. And they got those guys some help. They, you know, as their career progressed, and all of a sudden they got to be better quarterbacks. They got better. They got more efficient at throwing the ball. I mean, what Stephon Diggs did with Josh Allen this year is, you know, amazing. And obviously Lamar Jackson has shown massive improvement despite the fact he doesn't have great pass catchers. I mean, it's two guys. Like, Hollywood Brown should not be a number one wide receiver. So Jalen Hurts coming into that situation with guys banged up and in and out of the lineup in a clearly dysfunctional situation with Doug Peterson and management fighting, and obviously Doug Peterson is no longer there in Philadelphia. I just think that Jalen Hurts is one of these guys that, I don't know, I think that kid's a winner. You know, the way that like, people are arguing about Deshaun Watson coming out of Clemson, and they're like, ah, he can't throw, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, I don't know, man. I just think that kid's a winner. And obviously Deshaun Watson has proven all his critics wrong as well. Give me Jalen Hurts, man. If he's the starting quarterback of the Eagles, he is going to be a top 10 fantasy quarterback, and he won't be drafted as such. Like, he will be the answer that I say all offseason. Who could be this year's Lamar Jackson, this year's Josh Allen, quarterback that takes a big leap? Jalen Hurts is that answer.
Yeah, you mentioned the accuracy. Just a couple of thoughts to follow up on that. So the accuracy last year over the total course of the season, he completed 52% of his passes, which obviously that's a poor number. But yeah. As Mike Clay noted on Twitter, you know, context often helps with accuracy. And Mike's point amongst Mike's points, was the amount of deep throwing that Jalen Hurts did last year, which, you know, the deeper you throw the football, the less likely it is to be completed. It's just a simple logic. So the accuracy is not as much of a concern for me. The one thing I'm keeping an eye on is that there are so many times where we see a quarterback in a small sample size be utilized as a runner so frequently. There are also so many times where we wake up on Monday or Tuesday after a game saying to ourselves, how did Kyler Murray only have 5 rushes yesterday? Or how did basically every quarterback other than Lamar Jackson not get as many rushes as his athletic ability would dictate would be smart? So I'm not saying the Eagles won't utilize Jalen Hurts' legs as frequently as they did down the stretch last year, but that's something that a lot of coaches have shown a reticence to do with a quarterback who was their full-time starter, especially at the beginning of the season when you're planning for that guy to be there for the full 16 weeks. You can throw caution to the wind a bit more late in the year when you know that you're basically just playing for pride and evaluation, and Jalen Hurts is fresh in week 13, 14, 15, as opposed to week 1, where you still have a huge, huge season ahead of you. But I'm with you, Matthew. I think there's a lot of optimism here for Jalen Hurts, who could very well be, based off of his rushing ability alone, an interesting top 10 to 12 target.
This is a point that you and I are going to repeat a million times between now and draft day 2021.
Yeah.
In almost every case possible, if you can, you want a quarterback that runs. You just do, like, totally. I think 9 of the top 10 quarterbacks from last year all had over 250 rushing yards. Like, it's just too much of a difference maker in fantasy to not have one of those guys. And if you don't have one of those guys, you need somebody like Tom Brady who's going to throw 40 plus touchdown passes. You know what I mean? Like, just there aren't a lot of those guys in the NFL that don't run the ball, but will stand back in the pocket and throw it, you know, throw 40 touchdown passes. Like, does Aaron Rodgers run for as many touchdowns next year as he did this year? You know, he had a number of rushing touchdowns this year. And so, I don't know. I just think Jalen Hurts is somebody that they'll build their offense around and try to figure out how to maximize his strengths. Does he run as much? Probably not. But I think he improves as a thrower as well. And they have more short passes. And, you know, like, what does it look like in a full year with Jalen Reagor healthy, right? You know, and
sure,
this offense. So, yeah.
And they're going to have a ton of turnover at pass catcher this offseason, whether it's a Zach Ertz potential trade or release, right. Alshon Jeffrey released, DeSean Jackson's already been released.
Correct.
All the changes that could take place in Philly. And we're going to get back to more fantasy thoughts in just a second, discussing players that were surprise performers in 2020 and what it might take for them to repeat it in 2021. But first, a quick word from our friends at Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet, actually, I know it can be hard work as a recent new homeowner. But you know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And it's a good thing too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. So last week, for those that may have listened or even downloaded the show, we got into players that were entering their second season. And one of the names that we discussed was James Robinson. We'll run this back just quickly here and see whether James Robinson, who might have been the surprise of fantasy football last year, can repeat it going into this season. Before we talk about his fantasy outlook, though, just quickly, Stefania, he missed the final two games with a semi-nasty ankle sprain, if memory is correct, but that's not the kind of thing that we should have any concern for, even though he is a running back going forward.
Yeah, no, I think the offseason is plenty of time for him to get ready.
No lingering impact there, which is good. But this is a player, Matthew, who finishes RB5 on a per-game basis. Just really quickly to refresh people what we said last week, that we like the player. We think he's going to be good, really good in fantasy, maybe even a weekly starter. But finishing his RB5 once again might be a difficult thing for him to achieve.
Yeah, I mean, look, because, look, James Robinson was great, right? He was truly a one of the best stories of the year, both fantasy wise and just, you know, from a personnel level last year. So that was great. And I think he proved he belongs in the NFL. But I said this last week when we talked about this, like, you know, like it was sort of like, I forget what premise we used, like bullish or bearish. What was our premise? Daniel Dock, what was our premise last year?
Bullish or bearish. What? Slump or jump.
Yeah. Sophomore slump or sophomore jump.
Yeah. Slump or jump. Right, yeah. I didn't like it. That's why I forgot about it. But anyway,
I figured you would have fit into the slump category as a non-athletic. You just wouldn't have been a jumper, obviously. So, you know.
Yeah, no, 1,000%. 1,000%. Look at that, Daniel Dock. So anyway, I said slump, which I think people were surprised about. But the reason that I said that was I'm worried about him getting the same insane volume he got last year. You know, up until he got injured, he was getting something like 95% of all the Jaguars running back touches. And we expect this Jaguars team, or at least I do, I expect the Jaguars to be better this year. I don't know that, listen, they've got a long road ahead of them, but I think given how much cap space they have and Urban Meyer and his new staff, that I think they won't have to rely just as much on James Robinson. I think he's still going to be the lead back. He's still going to be a top 12 player at the position. But do I think he gets the insane volume that he got last year? I don't.
Yeah, so a reminder that slumping could mean going from RB5 to like RB11, right? So I think right. It's important. Yeah, it's important to categorize. Sure. Yeah.
Also, he's a pass catcher, you know, which is valuable in the running back world, 3 receiving touchdowns. My question, and this is a question for Field, is like, who's really going to be behind him? Like, just talking about his role at Jacksonville, is Ogunbowale, he's a free agent, right?
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that Ogunbowale was like, we're going to scrounge together some backfield depth for 2020, but doesn't seem to be a big part of their future. We'll see whether Reichwell Armstead is back. It's kind of one of those underreported stories.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a way to sort of quantify this, but it felt like Reichwell Armstead may have dealt with the scariest case of COVID-19 maybe in the NFL, maybe of any athlete that I can think of. I mean, he missed the entire year because of COVID and COVID complications. Obviously, we all wish him the best. He was a player that we thought coming into this year could be the starter. He landed on the COVID list. I think it was actually twice, but the second time was for the entire season. And then Stefania, you know, I've learned, and I think we've all learned in following this league for a long time, is that sometimes a new regime may come in with a fresh set of eyes and just say, you know what? Even though this guy was great last year, like sometimes they may have an idea of an ideal running back, and it may be a guy who's bigger or more powerful than James Robinson. So I'm not reporting this or even speculating on it, but if you told me there was a world where the Jaguars, who have all this cap space, said, Hey, we're signing Aaron Jones to a 4-year deal for $36 million. Wouldn't totally stun me, right? I mean, they have a lot of money to spend, and Aaron Jones is a really good player. Maybe they just want to get as good as they can, as fast as they can. But I think going into next year, again, February 23rd thoughts, James Robinson's the guy. Let's keep it moving only because we have a lot of names to get to, which also includes David Montgomery, who last year ended up finishing as RB6 on a per-game basis, Matthew, but that was largely charged by his final stretch. He was the best running back in fantasy in total points from week 12 on. I think this was soft schedule. Do you think it was some sort of rejuvenation for David Montgomery? And can this keep up again next year?
So, yes, okay. Somewhat and somewhat. So you asked me three questions, Aaron. So my answers are yes, somewhat and somewhat. Is this a result of a soft schedule? Absolutely. They had a ridiculous schedule down the stretch. We talked about it like from week 10 on, just like trade for your Bears, trade for Allen Robinson, trade for David Montgomery, because that schedule is so ridiculous, especially in the fantasy playoffs. So is this a rejuvenation of some sort? Yeah, because you know what? I think David Montgomery, yes, now it helped that he was playing against among the worst competition in the NFL, but David Montgomery finally looked like an NFL running back towards the end and made tough runs and finished them off and hit holes with purpose, became more involved in the passing game, which was great, became kind of a three down back. So yes, somewhat of a rejuvenation. Can it repeat? I'm not fully, look, do I think he took a leap? I do. But do I think he took as much of a leap as he was over the last 6 weeks when he was as dominant as he was? I don't. Look, the expectation is that Tariq Cohen will be back and healthy. So I don't know that David Montgomery gets the amount of passing game work that he did once Tariq Cohen went out with that season-ending injury. And I do think the schedule is going to be a problem. We don't know who the quarterback of this team is going to be. Is it going to be Mitch? Is it going to be Nick Foles? They were rumored to be in the Carson Wentz sweepstakes. They're rumored to be in the market for a quarterback. So, you know, what will this offense look like? So, I don't know. Like, I feel like David Montgomery, you know, who finished, you know, as a top 10 fantasy running back on a per game basis, I feel like he's a flex play. He's a flex play. You know what I mean? Like, maybe he's a running back too, just because it's such an ugly position. But like, I don't know. Are you excited about drafting David Montgomery next year? I'm not.
I am actually. I'm way more excited than you were. Yeah. I mean, certainly the soft schedule was something that added to his value down the stretch.
Yep.
And I know this is, you know, sometimes you got to be careful making these kinds of like obscure metaphors here, but I thought the Bucs offense down the stretch of the regular season this past year gained so much confidence and belief when they were bludgeoning basically the worst the NFL had to offer. It was like they were playing the Falcons twice and the Lions, sorry, Daniel, and like all these soft as pudding defenses that made them feel like, hey, this offense that for much of the season could not meet expectations finally was, and then they carried over in the playoffs. And I use that analogy to like, maybe David Montgomery wasn't facing the 85 Bears every Sunday, but I think David probably has a heightened level of confidence in his own ability after a really tough rookie season that I can be a good player in this league. And obviously he's not just a runner. He's a very good pass catcher as well. One more running back to get to before we move to wide receiver.
Can I ask you a real quick question before we move on real fast? Obviously Tariq Cohen was out for the majority of the year and Cordarrelle Patterson kind of stepped up as that number two back.
Yeah.
You think that when Tariq Cohen comes back, understanding that they already had a guy that was, you know, shifty in Cordarrelle Patterson, that that's going to affect Montgomery's value more than what Patterson did this last season?
Not really. Honestly, I mean, I think Tariq Cohen is what he is. You're paying him as much for return game ability, passing game ability on occasion. You know, I think there are examples of players around the NFL where you can be basically that pass catcher and it won't take away from a workhorse's fantasy impact, whether it's Gio Bernard when Joe Mixon is running well, whether it was James White when any of the Patriots running backs were running well. There have been enough examples of it that I'm not super concerned about Tariq Cohen. All right, let's keep things going here.
I will say this, Field. I bet, just mark my words here, I bet when we get into it and you start really getting into it, I bet you David Montgomery winds up lower in your ranks than you think. Like when you sit here and go like, all right, David Montgomery, you're Cam Akers. David Montgomery, you're DeAndre Swift. Like you start going down some of these players and you're just like, and then suddenly you're like, wow, I guess I have David Montgomery running back 18 or something like that.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though, as an RB2, right? Like, that's where I – you said more of a flex play than an RB2. I think he's going to be somewhere between 15 and 20 for me. So
that's fair. I mean, I probably would have some pair between like 17 and 22. So I'm slightly lower than you, but I'm not significantly so.
It's okay, February.
Let's keep rolling. Sorry, it is February. Let's keep rolling here through one more running back, Miles Gaskin, who last year on a per game basis was running back 10. Remember, he did not start the season as the starter. He had to work his way up the depth chart with Matt Breida and also at the time, Jordan Howard there. He had his own case of COVID, which cost him, I believe, 3 to 4 games last year, opened the door to Sevan Ahmed. This feels to me, Stefania, like what we say now could be completely irrelevant in a month because the Dolphins have plenty of money to work with. They have plenty of draft picks to work with. And just because we feel like Miles Gaskin is good enough to be a starting running back in the NFL, this is a team that, you know, was all over the board last year with running backs. They could do the same thing this year and say, hey, we're going to again look for two new players in free agency or draft someone high.
Except for, I think, you know, what's interesting is towards the end, we really had to sift through who were the running backs and who were they leaning towards when they did have all of them around. You remember, they were all banged up at the end. Miles Gaskin actually missed a month with an MCL sprain. He was on that short-term IR and then came back and then missed at the end because of COVID. So it was a mixture of those two things. But when he was there, he was pretty dominant. And, you know, Sevan Ahmed came out of nowhere and was super impressive when he was on the field. I don't think we have to worry, but, you know, I don't know what happens with Matt Breida, but I don't think he is a threat as a starter. So some of the things that we thought Matt Breida could threaten with in terms of taking time away, I just don't think that's the case anymore. But you're right. I mean, Miami was nothing if not willing to shift. Look what they did with their quarterback situation. That sure. They're probably as willing to be hybrid and flexible as any team in the league. So it makes predictability very hard. But I think Gaskin was solid when he was on the field. Even when he came back from knee injury, like right away, it was like he didn't skip a beat.
Matthew, any thoughts on Gaskin before we move to wide receivers? Your confidence level that he could be close to what he was last year when given the opportunity to start?
I think that's the key part is opportunity. I mean, listen, he had one that game against the Raiders late in the season.
Don't remind me.
You know, he had one run, which was just like where you're like, oh, like, you know, there are moments where you're just like, hey, he's just a guy. And then there were moments like that one run against it was a crazy long touchdown run against the Raiders. You know, the exact play I'm talking about.
It was actually a catch, right?
Yeah, it was just like it was unbelievable. And you're like, oh, there might be something here. And so I think the problem here is how does Miami see about if Miles Gaskin is the starter, if they don't draft a guy high or they don't sign a high price free agent, then my answer is yes on Miles Gaskin. Although I did like what I saw out of Sevan Ahmed too, but I think Gaskin is potentially special. But look, I mean, if Miami thinks he's just a guy, then yeah, he's not going to get that opportunity. Remember that this is the same brain trust that signed Jordan Howard to one of the more lucrative offseason contracts last year, only to release him, you know, halfway through the season. So I don't know that we can necessarily trust the front office of the Dolphins to make the right call here in terms of running back evaluation. But from a pure talent standpoint, I like what I saw. It just depends on whether the Dolphins do or not. So his job security, I think, is the most tenuous of the guys we're talking about.
Let's talk wide receivers now, and we begin with a couple of players that we don't have to belabor because they're really, really good. But last year, Calvin Ridley, who a lot of us liked as the breakout player in fantasy football, wound up finishing as the fourth best wide receiver in fantasy on a per-game basis last season. The guy was good with Julio Jones around. He was good when Julio Jones was not around. Matthew, I think probably the question will be the numbers bear out last year that he should have been drafted as one of the top 10 or so wide receivers. Will that be the case going into 2021? Like, are you willing to make him a top 10 wide receiver in your preseason ranks?
Yes.
That was succinct and confident. Yeah.
I mean, look, I mean, honestly, why does fantasy success happen? Talent and opportunity. Does Calvin Ridley have talent? He's got loads of it. We all know this, right? Opportunity. Like, he's got the same quarterback. He's got the same offensive system. Or not the same offensive system, I should say. But, like, I think
a good offensive system. How about that?
What?
A good offensive system, I should say.
Yeah,
if nothing else, right?
Right. I mean, like, the majority of the elements that were there last year for Calvin Ridley to have the kind of success that he did are there once again for him in Atlanta. So assuming that Matt Ryan is still the quarterback of the Falcons, which we expect to happen, there's, you know, there are talks that Ryan could potentially be traded, but assuming everything's sort of the same, then yes. And I think it will be a healthy debate this offseason, and a legitimate one, is Julio or Ridley?
Who would you rather what's have? Interesting is he was playing with a foot injury for a bunch of the season too, and he was still that productive. So imagine if he's healthy the entire year, what he can do.
It's hard to find any red flags against Calvin Ridley, other than probably the simple idea that, you know, if you're going to, there are definitely examples, but there's just a tiny bit of trepidation sometimes when you try to throw two wide receivers into the top 10, because there are so many elite players that it's like, all right, if I have two of these guys in the top 10 or 12 or 14, it means somebody like, and I'm just throwing examples out here, Keenan Allen or Chris Godwin is sliding down the board, and Adam Thielen is sliding down the board. So I think Ridley's preseason ranks will be a little bit more disparate in the community because there are a lot of good wide receivers, but he's a star, as is A.J. Brown. And do we think, Matthew, that maybe a breakout, which sounds weird to say about A.J. Brown because he finished as wide receiver 6 on a per-game basis, do we think that A.J. Brown could have a further ascension this upcoming season?
Yeah, potentially, because he still just didn't get a ton of targets. You know what I mean? Like, he was super efficient. Like, you know, felt like he would get, like, sometimes 4 targets a game, but one of them was always, like, you know, a 40-yard touchdown where he's dragging 3 guys into the end zone with him. So, you know, do they get a little bit more high volume in terms of how they use him? Siobhan, you can speak to this as well, but A.J. Brown was banged up for a lot of the year as well. And
yeah, barely practiced.
Yeah. I mean, it was – go ahead, Stefania.
I was just going to say, from the very beginning of the year, you remember he missed a couple of weeks, and there were talk about him having a bone bruise and then caused some eyebrow raising when he came out. He made that post after he had surgery on both his knees in the off as soon as the season ended, and said that, you know, the staff told him that he should probably shut it down. Like, they were actually having a conversation about him shutting it down for the season, and he still played and produced like he did. I don't know if it was that dramatic. It certainly came out that way, but he was not himself. I think it's fair to say. Remember, he had practice days off every single week for the rest of the year as a result. So again, imagine what might be different. And maybe that's a reflection of how they use him in the offense. You know, there were constraints on him because he couldn't run the way he normally would.
I would say this too, to Matthew's point. Matthew, you had said that you didn't feel like they had involved him as much. Unless I'm wrong, Kyle, feel free to jump in here, but he was outside the top 20 in targets per game at the wide receiver position. So if he's outside the top 20 in targets per game, imagine if he gets inside that top 15 or that top 10, what that could do to his value, to your point, Matthew.
And part of the reason why that could spike, Daniel, is that Corey Davis is set to become an unrestricted free agent, 5th overall pick back in 2017, entered the 4th year of his contract last year. The team declined his 5th-year option. He was really, really good. He was wide receiver 32 on a per-game basis last year and had 3 top 8 weeks, Matthew. So can we even plant our flag one way or the other on Corey Davis until we know where he lands? Or is he a player that you kind of don't care where the setting is? You just believe enough in the talent and the growth last year that – if you were forced to do a draft before free agency, you'd feel confident making an investment in Corey Davis?
I would not feel confident making an investment in Corey Davis until I knew where he was going to be. And, you know, he feels a lot like, we joked about this at the beginning of the year, was like, is Corey Davis this year's Devontae Parker? Like, highly drafted wide receiver that's been a fantasy sleeper for a number of years. And then after a few years of disappointing results, everyone bails on him. And then finally, you know, it all sort of clicks in for him. And that's what ended up happening with Corey Davis. He didn't have the kind of season that Parker did 2 seasons ago, but he had a very good season, ultimately finishing, you know, wide receiver 32 on a points per game basis. And so to me, Corey Davis goes from a guy who in last year's drafts, you were like, wasn't even drafted, right? To somebody now that you take a flyer on later in your draft. I don't know that he's anyone I'm targeting. Like, again, in a season in which everything that could have gone right for Corey Davis went right, he still was outside the top 30 of wide receivers on a point-per-game basis. So I want to see where he lands, and he's going to be more of a late round flyer for me than anything this year.
I think he'll be paid handsomely this offseason in free agency, as I think that, and the franchise tag window opens today, the day that we're recording this podcast, we'll see players potentially like Allen Robinson and Chris Godwin and Kenny Golladay all receive the tag, which could bode well for the market for Corey Davis. Let's get to a couple other players here. Brandon Ayuk, Stefania, who stepped up in such a huge way for your team last year, finished as wide receiver 18 during his rookie season with the 49ers. But part of that was because they needed them to. This team looks much healthier on paper going into next season, as every team does, but especially one that was injury riddled as last year. You watch this 49ers team as closely as anybody. And I know that, yes, Debo and George Kittle and other players will be back, but I don't know how you can not watch Brandon Ayuk and think to yourself, he might be special already.
There's a reason that he was the wide receiver they targeted. Like they went after him for a reason. That's because they thought he would fit with what Kyle Shanahan wanted to do. And you're right. He actually showcased the potential, not just in terms of physically being able to challenge for a catch, but in terms of what he could do after the catch. He just fits the mold of everyone who can do things very close to the line of scrimmage and then explode afterwards. And so I don't think that he's necessarily going anywhere. I do think what's interesting is, you know, this team really played without Jimmy Garoppolo for the year. And as of right now, I anticipate that Jimmy Garoppolo will be the starting quarterback this year and be healthy. And so how does the offense look when everyone is working together? I don't think we fully understand that. Garoppolo has not been known to be a deep threat. I mean, he works a lot in the middle of the field. And that's how they operated this year out of necessity as well. So it'll be interesting to see, but I think Brandon Ayuk is going to be on more people's radar certainly than he was last year. I still think that he will be a fairly high volume guy regardless of the health of the others.
I feel strongly the same way. And I'll just note, and I don't know if Kyle Shanahan plays fantasy football or not. My sense that he's very aware of it. I know he's referenced it in press conferences. It just feels like in that offense, there's so many ways for wide receivers to get touches that work in fantasy, right? I mean, they run so many jet sweeps and wide receiver screens and slants that I don't care if the wide receiver catches the football 18 inches behind the line of scrimmage. It's still a catch. And if it results in 11 yards, that's 2.1 fantasy points in PPR as opposed to 1.1 for a running back on a rushing attempt. So I'm in here as well on Brandon Ayuk. Matthew, Antonio Brown's going to be a free agent this offseason. The Bucs, in their post-championship run, have talked about bringing as many players back as they can, and it seems like the early sentiment is that guys are going to want to be back there. But Antonio Brown may also say to himself, maybe I have one more opportunity to go be the guy somewhere. Based on what we saw last season in an abbreviated run with the Bucs, do you think he can be the man in someone's passing offense, or do you think that he's best suited now to be whether it's 1B or 1C, like it was last year in Tampa?
Yeah, I mean, nothing I saw last year from Antonio Brown suggested that he'd had a massive drop-off in talent. Like, you know, the questions about Antonio Brown are entirely off the field. I don't think there's significant questions about him as an on-field player, you know. So I'll be interested to see. Listen, Antonio Brown was out of football, and it was only until Tom Brady basically insisted that he come back, that, you know, he was sort of welcomed back in, you know, and brought back into the NFL. And I'm not saying there weren't other opportunities for him. There were, obviously, but I think the sense that you get is that, you know, Antonio Brown is very grateful and has obviously a great relationship with Tom Brady, and they just won a Super Bowl together. So I'm not 100% convinced that he goes somewhere else, because I don't know that the big money market, you follow this much closer than I do, you have much more insight than I do, but just gut tells me, like, knowing all the off the field history, is somebody going to really pay him a ton of guaranteed money again, seeing what happened and with the Raiders and the Patriots and, you know, and basically everywhere he's been other than Pittsburgh. And so yes, but if Antonio Brown is somewhere else where he's like the number one guy, then he probably should be drafted as such. I didn't see anything that made me think like, wow, that guy can't play football anymore.
No way.
No way, what? To be number one?
Because there is nothing. You're saying. No way would I. If he's in Tampa Bay, I evaluate him completely differently than if he's anywhere else. And it's a mixture of things. It's not just the football skill, but it's interesting you say that, Matthew, because I don't know that I'm as confident as you that he showed me there was no drop off. He just wasn't utilized that way. You know, like I didn't see, there were a couple flash plays in there, but to me, he was another receiver, talented, yes, but I didn't have that same feeling. And the minute he goes somewhere else, he's immediately off my.
I feel like he still had the speed. There definitely were deep routes where he was open. And honestly, Tom Brady just missed him. Tom Brady just made a bad throw, right? And there were still contested catches that he made. I feel like the route running is still elite. I don't feel like there's been a big drop off in speed. Like, again, you know, I guess we will see. For me, look, when he was last year, I remember you and I talking on the, whenever it was 2 years ago on the Fantasy Football Marathon, and I was asked for my bust, and I was just like, I don't understand why everyone has Antonio Brown in their top 10. You know what I mean? Like, I have no way am I touching this with a 10-foot pole. There's just, it's too much of a drop-off from Ben Roethlisberger, Derek Carr. Like, he was one of my big busts, and I didn't expect the implosion that happened there, but I did think there was some concern. So, I certainly wouldn't be, quote, all in on Antonio Brown somewhere else. But the question about, like, do I think he still can be a fantasy wide receiver one in the right situation? I do. I just don't think he's going to get that situation. I think he's going to be more of a wide receiver three and probably a better NFL complement to a team the way he is in Tampa Bay than a centerpiece of a fantasy franchise.
I think there's a chance that Antonio Brown's best, most realistic. And when I say most realistic, I still think this is like extremely unlikely, but his best chance of reemerging as a fantasy weekly lock and star would be if somehow Chris Godwin doesn't return to the Bucs.
Yes.
And he's the number two guy there. But again, I'm saying that's exceedingly unlikely based off what I've heard so far. But if it was he replacing Godwin as the number two in Tampa, that's probably his best.
That avenue. I could see.
Yeah, but I'm just mad. I'm having a hard time. Let's wrap it up.
Real quick question. I'm curious, okay. And I know that this isn't the podcast for this, but does he have any legal proceedings from the stuff that has happened off the field that will take place in 2021 that could affect his status or anything for this year?
Absolutely. I don't know if everything has been closed, Daniel. There was times where even after he returned, there was still work left.
Mm-hmm.
But
there's still stuff to monitor is more what I mean. It's not like everything.
Of course, there is stuff to monitor. Absolutely. Yes. So something to keep an eye on as we move forward this offseason. And again, it's not even just the stuff that hasn't been resolved, Daniel. It's just the idea that like we have a large enough sample size to know that Antonio Brown's availability is something you have to keep on your radar because of his prior history. Let's finish up the show today with just a couple of tight ends. Matthew, your favorite here, and I'll let you have the floor to start. Logan Thomas, who I believe is going to be a free agent this offseason. I'll have to double check that just to be sure. But Logan Thomas was so good last year for your Washington football team, maybe by necessity. Are you banking that there is enough improvement this year in the offense in general that Logan Thomas might actually be squeezed a little bit?
I'm a believer in Logan Thomas. Now, we have Washington has a bunch of questions at the quarterback position. Namely, who is it going to be? I mean, right now, like, is it Alex Smith? Is it Taylor Heineke? Is it someone that's not on the team? So I think there's some questions there. But look, they like Logan Thomas quite a bit. I thought he just showed everything you would want out of a fantasy tight end. And what was exciting for me is that, you know, this is a guy that the route running was unbelievable. He ran a route on over 87% of his team's dropbacks. That was the best of any tight end. Like they just don't have a lot. And even if they add another wide receiver, say they add Curtis Samuel, who's one of the one of the players that's been rumored to be coming there. Like even if they add somebody like Curtis Samuel, I still think the tight end will be heavily involved in Scott Turner's offense. And so especially given the dearth of talent at the tight end position, give me Logan Thomas. That's not, I mean, you can say I'm sitting there looking through it with burgundy colored glasses, but I thought Logan Thomas did everything you'd want out of a tight end. He was somebody that I had as a sleeper in the preseason. He made me look good. You know, I love me my obscure tight ends. Logan Thomas can play, man. He showed he can play in the NFL.
Yeah, he was really, really, really solid for Washington. And I don't think if he is not there next year, it's going to be because of lack of money. They certainly have the resources to pay him this offseason. Robert Tonyan-Stefania was really good for the Packers, some believe, myself included. He should have gone to the Pro Bowl. But he had, I believe, 10 touchdowns last year. Wasn't a super high, 10 at minimum. Wasn't a guy that I felt like had a ton of targets. I know he had over 50 targets last year, is one of the notes that Kyle shared with us, but I still feel like his volume, like it didn't feel to me just watching the Packers, like this was ever a guy that you felt strongly was going to be, I don't know, whatever, clearly one of the two focal points of their offense. It was Davante Adams. And then it was like, take your pick. It's going to be somebody else.
Depending on the week.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. It just felt, yeah.
I agree with you. I think when we had this conversation about tight ends before, we were talking about sort of our things that we looked at going into next year. And mine was that there was this one tier of tight ends, you know, minus Travis Kelce, who's alone on an island. And then there were you know, three others and that's it. And Robert Tonyan is just another tight end to me. When one thing that is appealing is Aaron Rodgers looks for him in the red zone, you know, so it's 12 touchdowns at double check. So, you know, when he's there and he scores, that's what you want out of your tight end, right? It's better to have a tight end who's going to find the end zone semi-regularly, as opposed to one who's going to have two or three catches for 40 yards in a game. Yeah. So,
yeah. And I'll clean up a couple things here, by the way. Kyle notes 3.7 targets per game for Tonyan. So you extrapolate that over the course of the season. That's like around 60 for the year, not a huge number. And Logan Thomas under contract through at least through 2021, I should note as well. Matthew, let's just finish, put a bow on the show with TJ Hawkinson. Really good player, I believe, but a guy that even though he finished, I believe, as tight end 3 last year, it was, if I'm not mistaken, 150 points fewer than Travis Kelce, which can be viewed two ways. Travis Kelce is like absurdly, absurdly good, or also that the tight end position is also pretty weak. I think it's probably both, right? Like Travis Kelce
is a rock star.
Yeah. Do you think that TJ Hawkinson can evolve into not a weekly starter, because he already is a weekly starter, but what would it take for TJ Hawkinson this offseason for you to make him a priority to target in drafts?
That basically no one comes back to the Lions, right? Which is understandable. I mean, you get this, right? You know, Daniel can talk about this. Like, who wants to play for that?
I regret this.
You know, like if you're Marvin Jones, you're Kenny Galladay, you're Danny Amendola, you're like the mascot. Like, you're just like, how do I get out of Detroit? How do I
move on? Not Rory. No, don't take Rory from us.
Yeah, I mean, just everyone. Just Rory. I want to leave. I want to get out. How do I leave?
Get it.
Assuming you're somebody like that, assuming, you know, all those players that are finally free of Detroit, flee the city, flee the state, you know, or force their way out the way that Matthew Stafford did, that, look, I think he's going to be the offense. I feel like people forget that TJ Hawkinson missed most of his rookie year, that in essence last year was pretty much his rookie year for all intents and purposes. He only played, I think, 2 games his rookie year. So last year was his first full season, you know, and he also still got a little bit banged up last year, but whatever, his first full season as like a tight end in the NFL, and he's a stud, man. And so I think if you come into the season, and you mentioned Kenny Galladay might be a franchise target for the Lions, that they might franchise tag him. So we'll see, but you know, rumors are that Marvin Jones is going to go to LA and you know, connect with Matthew Stafford out there. We'll see what happens with Amendola, but I think TJ Hawkinson is going to be a focal point of this passing offense for Detroit. And we've certainly seen with Anthony Lynn and Hunter Henry in when Lynn was in LA that, you know, they like to use the tight end. So I do think that TJ Hawkinson should not get past tight end 5 in your drafts, but I also think he shouldn't go, you know, within a round or two of Travis Kelce. I do think there is still a massive gap between those two players.
Yeah, I would agree on that. But your point's well taken, Matthew. Like, if there was a world where the Lions did not have Marvin Jones or Kenny Galladay or Danny Amendola, and they didn't use the 7th overall pick on a wide receiver, and they just sort of pieced it together, whether it was guy like Quinton Cephas, a draft pick last year, plus one or two more draft picks this year and somebody else on the free agent market, we might start looking at things a little bit differently with TJ Hockenson. All right, that's all we have for this show this week. We're going to be back next week.
I would say that I think, unless Kenny Galladay comes back, I would say Hockenson is going to join, and there's a handful of tight ends that you could say this about. Like, okay, name a tight end who is going to, who is likely to lead their team in targets. Kelsey's there.
Yep.
Kittle is there.
Waller.
You know, there's a cup, and I think Logan Thomas is potentially there, although they've got obviously McLaurin. I think TJ Hockenson is on that list of name a player that could lead his team in targets. And I think Hockenson is right there.
He certainly is. As mentioned, we are back every Tuesday during the off season. We're hopeful to get news every single week. It feels like right now the few pieces of information, really the one piece of information that has significant fantasy relevance that we're keeping an eye on, is Deshaun Watson potentially being traded. That being said, by the time that we are speaking next week on March 2nd, we could have some players that have been franchise tagged by their respective teams, which of course would paint a clearer picture of what their offenses might look like for next year. In the meantime, for Matthew and Stefania on field, we're back next week, same time, same place. Talk to you then.
Peace out.
You're in the whole 6010.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.